This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Later in the show, we're going to talk to public health experts and catch up on the latest news around the pandemic and the Delta variant. But before we do that, we're joined by Lee Gaines, investigative education reporter at WFYI, to talk about a new story out today about police officers working in Indiana's schools. Welcome, Lee, to the program. So glad to have you on with us today.
Happy to be here.
The story that you have out is about the training that officers go through or don't go through to work in schools. Can you tell us what the issue at the core of the story is?
So the core of this story is that there are officers in the state of Indiana and nationally that believe police who are working in schools should have specialized training, and that this is essentially a specialized position, much like being a detective or a member of a SWAT team is. And so they say it's unreasonable to expect that someone who came out of the police academy is able to function well and appropriately within a school setting if they don't have this special training.
And when you came across this story and you reported on it, how did you find it?
So I wound up talking to someone named Chase Lyde. He is the head of the Indiana School Resource Officer Association. And it was interesting because the way that this is codified in Indiana law is it looks like all police working in schools have to undergo this 40-hour training. And what he told me is that that's not true. And it's actually something that he's been lobbying for from lawmakers for the last few years or so. So to explain that, basically what's happening is that if you want to be called a school resource officer, then you are required to go through a 40-hour basic SRO training from the National Association of School Resource Officers, NASRO for short, or another approved program. But here's the thing. Police officers can work inside schools without this training so long as they don't call themselves school resource officers.
Oh, that's interesting. So they can call themselves just police officers?
Yeah, they're just police officers working in schools. And so if they're just police officers working in schools, then they're not required under Indiana law to have any specialized training.
I'm curious, does that mean, like, so do schools have to have school resource officers or do they have police in their place?
They don't have to have SROs. There was a grant program, or there is a grant program managed by the Indiana Department of Homeland Security, which previously, if you wanted to get grant funding from the state to employ a police officer in your school, they had to be an SRO. And so you had to have that training. You had to be certified as an SRO. That program was changed very recently, I believe in the last year or so, so that schools can request grant money to have either an SRO or just a police officer in their school. So if they're just a police officer in the school, they're not required to have that training. And the justification for that change, I was told by a spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security, is that they wanted to get police into schools in more rural areas where there might not be a trained school resource officer available.
So I'm just trying to think. So if they want police to come in rural areas, couldn't they just train them to be SROs?
They could, but the training it's a 40-hour training. It covers 5 days a week, and it's not free, but they could do it. And I think this is what Chase is really frustrated by and wants to change. He wants to make this mandatory, not just for, you know, quote unquote school resource officers, but for any police officer working in a school in the state of Indiana. He wants them to go through this training, basically saying it's really necessary in his opinion and the opinion of other people who are school resource officers.
When it comes to the training, what kind of training are we talking about? You said it's about 40 hours. What does it entail?
So it covers, so this is the NASRO training, the National Association of School Resource Officer training. So it covers how to interact with students with disabilities, things like the ethics of school policing, counseling and mentoring. So basically how to be an informal counselor and mentor to students, how social media works, how the team brain develops. This is something that, you know, I talked to Chase a lot about, which is basically teaching officers about, you know, the adolescent brain development and why adolescent behaviors or child behaviors might be different than that of adult behaviors, trauma in children. So adverse childhood experiences, how that impacts brain development and how children show up in a classroom. how to spot the signs of sex trafficking, school-related laws, also how to identify racial biases and foster and retain relationships with diverse and marginalized students, as well as trends in drugs, crime prevention, and then things like emergency preparedness. And so the course is taught in a classroom, although I'm unsure how it's been done in the pandemic. They have PowerPoint presentations, you know, videos and practical scenarios. And basically the students are given a test. And at the end of that, they have to get a score of 70% or higher to earn this certificate to be a school resource officer.
Is this available for non-police folks who want to be a school resource officer? And it sounds remarkable. The training sounds like something everybody could use.
Yeah, I think there are other types of training that you can get. But my understanding is this is specifically for sworn law enforcement officials who work in schools in any capacity. So it's building on law enforcement training that they previously had in the academy. The whole argument that's being made here by the advocates for this training is that, yes, like, you need to learn how to be a police officer, and that's why everyone goes to a police academy. But in order to work inside a school setting, you also need to know all of these other things as well.
Well, what about the folks that are not proponents of this training? Or, I mean, are there any folks that don't think it's necessary?
So I've talked to a couple lawmakers about this who have worked with LIDE, and basically they tried to pass some legislation over the last couple years, and that legislation either died in committee or didn't get very far. And so one of the concerns that I've heard is this fear that if you start mandating training like this, training that isn't free, it costs about $450 to $500 per officer, although there are, you know, discounts if agencies want to train a large number of them. But basically that if you start mandating this, then you're going to ultimately decrease the number of police in schools, which is something that the lawmakers I talked to are concerned about, and other people who opposed this mandatory requirement were concerned about.
Are they following any sort of model or evidence from other states that have done this?
So it's interesting because the approach to policing in schools, from what I can tell in my reporting, is kind of all over the place. So there are about 28 states across the country that have some statutory requirement for training, but it varies pretty extensively. Like, it could be, you know, they're only required to do active shooter training or something along those lines. So there really isn't like consistency across the nation or a model to hold up across the nation about how police and schools should operate. You know, it should be important to note here for context that the number of police in schools has dramatically increased over the last decade, from, you know, 1% of schools reporting a police officer in their buildings in the 1970s to more than half in 2018. And as the number of police in schools has risen, largely in response to concerns around mass shootings, there hasn't been, you know, associated legislation catching up with that rise in the number of police officers. So you see a piecemeal approach, not only in the state of Indiana, but across the country.
And when it comes to lawmakers who are pushing or fighting against it, are there any specific lawmakers that have spoken out?
Not that I'm aware of. I talked to Representative Bob Boehning and Senator Jeff Rotz about this, and this is actually something they support. Something that Jeff Rotz told me is that he wants to have some consistency in the statutes about how police and schools operate and what training is or is not required. He told me he needs to do more research on the subject. And Representative Bob Boehning also told me that this is something that he would support, but it's a matter of convincing other people, their colleagues in the Senate and the House, that this is something worth pursuing.
Have you heard of any consequences that might happen if officers don't go through the SRO training?
This is something that I asked Chase, as well as the head of the National Association of School Resource Officers. His name is DJ Sheff. He's also an SRO in the Carmel Clay District. And basically what Sheff told me is that he is very concerned about an increase in arrests of students and an increase in altercations, physical altercations between police officers and schools and students, as well as lawsuits against school districts because of something that a police officer in the school did. diet. And so that's something that they're really concerned about and why they want to have this training. I think it's also important for our listeners to know that up until the 2018-19 school year, arrests were increasing since 2016 in Indiana schools. They dropped slightly in the 2019-2020 year, which I think is to be expected because of school closures during the pandemic, but they didn't drop by that much.
Right, right. Well, when it comes to this topic, has the State Department of Education made any action or comment about it?
Yeah. So another thing that's important for our listeners to understand is that the Indiana Department of Education just recently partnered with the National Association for School Resource Officers, NASRO, to provide this 40-hour basic SRO training in regions of the state that they say are underserved with trained SROs. And they told me that that ranges from rural to urban and everywhere in between, and that the state will fund training for up to 180 officers over the next 2 years. But the spokesperson I spoke to at the Indiana Department of Education says they're still in the process of figuring out what regions of the state are actually underserved, because another important thing to note here is no one is tracking how many officers in schools have or have not received this training. And so this is something that Chef with NASRO and Carmel Clay Schools was really happy about, this partnership with the Indiana Department of Education. He says it sends the message that this kind of training is valuable and important, but he and Lyde still believe that state lawmakers need to take action to correct this problem and mandate the training across the board.
Do you think that there's going to be any movement on this, like the next legislative session?
I have no idea. We'll see. You know, that's something about being a reporter is, you know, I heard this, I was shocked by it because I thought the training was required. Turns out it's not. You know, I wanted to highlight it and explain what was going on and why people think this training is important. You know, it's one of those things about being a journalist. You just put the information out there. You really have no idea what people will do with it. You know, your whole positive change does result, though.
So we'll keep an eye on this. And thank you so much for doing this investigative report and coming on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Lee Gaines is an investigative education reporter at WFYI. You can see her work at WFYI.com/news. We'll be back after a quick break with health experts to talk about the impact the Delta variant is having in Indiana and what's next for guidelines and mandates during the pandemic. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're getting an update on the pandemic and talking about the effect the Delta variant is having in Indiana. We'll be speaking with some health experts, and we'd love your questions and comments for them if you're listening live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. With us now are two guests, both from the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University. Shandy Dearth is director of the Center for Public Health Practice, and Thomas Dzinski is the Director of Epidemiology Education. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yes, thanks for the opportunity.
Shandy, we'll get into the details throughout the rest of the show, but before we do, how is Indiana doing right now?
So unfortunately, we are starting to see cases increase. We are still doing contact tracing for Marion County, and at a low a few weeks ago, we were only seeing 25 or 30 cases a day. And unfortunately, we're heading towards that 200 a day. And the State Department of Health did announce today that they saw more than 1,600 cases over the last day. So unfortunately, we're trending in the wrong direction, and it looks like vaccinations have basically frozen. We're not making enough progress in that area.
Is it a possibility to even make progress if this variant is spreading so quickly to catch up with vaccinations at the rate that it's spreading?
It is, because unfortunately it could get a lot worse. I mean, this should be the red flag to go ahead and get vaccinated now if you have not been vaccinated yet. And so we're not in that dire situation yet, but we could be within a few weeks where we could start to see that surge on hospital systems. So that's why we really encourage everyone to go ahead and get vaccinated. If you've been vaccinated, let your friends and family know so they see that you've been vaccinated and everything's been fine. And it might help encourage them to get vaccinated as well.
Maybe we need those stickers like I voted, I got vaccinated.
Exactly. I actually saw those handed out at the site where I took my daughter to be vaccinated a few weeks ago. And I think it's just a great reminder to share that, to let people know that you're fine. You got vaccinated. You're able to move on and go back to what, you know, we used to think of as a normal life.
Absolutely. Well, Thomas, what are we seeing with the Delta variant? Is it having the impact you thought it would?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, at least looking here in Indiana, the Delta variant makes up about 87% of the cases that we're seeing currently in the state of Indiana. It's definitely something that is more infectious than what we've seen with other variants of this particular virus. And we're seeing, unfortunately, breakthrough disease of people that are vaccinated now. That I should note, though, that breakthrough disease is very mild. Generally doesn't have very strong signs or symptoms associated with it. And people that are vaccinated aren't being hospitalized and aren't dying like those that are unvaccinated at this point.
Well, we'll talk a bit more about the breakthrough cases, but I want to ask you about the variants. I know we've discussed this various times on our show, but for listeners who may be listening for the first time, how do these variants pop up?
Sure. So you have to think of it. I often think of this as like the monks in the medieval ages, where they were copying books, right? So if a monk were copying a book and they made a mistake and that book got out and somebody else copied it, well, then that's a variation on what the book originally said. And the virus works the same way. So what viruses do is when they enter your system, like you inhale it, they seek out healthy cells and they attach to those healthy cells and invade them. Inside that cell, then, what they do is make copies of themselves, right? So if there's a copying error in that cell, that's then what emerges from that cell, and the process starts over again until you have a new variation of the virus circulating in the population. And with the Delta variant, that's exactly what we saw. It actually emerged out of India earlier this year because they had just a tremendous amount of cases, a lot of people being infected. So we saw a variation of the virus emerge out of there. And that's really an important point, because if we can keep people from being infected, we're less likely to get variants.
And, you know, you're mentioning that it first started in India. I remember reading articles about this, I don't know if it was a fungus or something that was also on a rise with folks having Delta. Are we seeing any of that here in the U.S.?
I haven't seen any of that. No, which is good news. But, you know, the concern is if we can get more people vaccinated, we slow down the rate of transmission of the disease itself, which means fewer and fewer people are being infected and able to spread the disease, which means then we cut down on the possibility of another variant emerging. And that's always been our concern in public health, is that we get a variant that the vaccine isn't as effective against.
Well, speaking of the effectivity of the vaccine, is the Delta variant, are vaccines as effective for the Delta variant as they've been for other ones?
It definitely seems fairly high at this point for all three of the vaccines, like in the 80 percentile, right? We know that no vaccines are perfect or 100%, but right now the vaccines that we have available seem very effective against the Delta variant.
Well, Shanti, Thomas mentioned some of the breakthrough cases, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen and read about this. Can you sort of give us an idea of what that means when we hear breakthrough cases?
Sure. So a breakthrough case is when someone tests positive for COVID, even though they're fully vaccinated. So either they've had their two doses of their Moderna or Pfizer, or their dose of J&J, and enough time has passed that they should be fully vaccinated. And so what we're seeing are some breakthrough cases. That's not unexpected. We knew we would see that with any kind of vaccine. We see some breakthrough cases, but with most vaccines as well, if you do get diagnosed with COVID, the symptoms are much milder. You're a lot less likely to end up in the hospital, and we're not seeing mortality cases very often with a breakthrough case as well. Some of the studies are showing of those people who do die from COVID who have been fully vaccinated, they're almost always over 80, and they have comorbid conditions that make them more likely to die from COVID, unfortunately.
Should we be worried at all when we hear that the number of breakthrough cases are increasing?
It's definitely a sign for us to go ahead and mask up again. That's why CDC reversed their decision a few weeks ago. But I just want to point out that some of the headlines that we see might seem alarming. I know just recently I'd seen a headline that said 5,000 breakthrough cases in Massachusetts. But if you really go through and read the article, the state has 4.3 million people vaccinated. 80 of those breakthrough cases did die, unfortunately, from COVID. But if you do the math on that, that's 0.0018% of those people who were vaccinated. And so it's really unlikely that you're going to get hospitalized, even more unlikely that you will die from COVID if you get the vaccine. So just like the flu vaccine, sometimes you get the flu vaccine and sometimes you still get flu, but you're not nearly sick. You don't end up in the hospital, and fortunately, you're able to survive and go on. And that's what we're seeing, too, with the COVID vaccine.
I think there's somehow this misconception that folks had that the vaccine was like this golden ticket and you'd never, ever get infected. Even though, as you said, if you did test positive for COVID, you're likely to be less sick than somebody who hasn't been vaccinated.
Right. Well, I agree. We all, you know, have a lot of hope on this vaccine. And I just want to say that this these vaccines are still very effective. I mean, they're more effective than a lot of other vaccines that we have for other diseases in the U.S. And we use them on a regular basis. But the key there is that enough people get vaccinated on a regular basis that we keep the transmission down. So we don't see a lot of outbreaks now in the U.S. of measles, mumps, rubella. But that's because we all get vaccinated as kids and we keep those vaccines up as adults when needed, when we do have an outbreak. And we need to get to that stage now with COVID. We all need to get those vaccines to stamp out some of the transmission.
Right. I'm thinking about just as a kid getting chickenpox, and now there's the vaccine. I'm like, I really wish I didn't have to get chickenpox.
Oh, me too. I went through that too. I was too old to have the vaccine, so I got the real thing, and I would have much rather had one more shot.
Right. Well, if you're listening live and you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Thomas, have you noticed anything about the way breakthrough cases are being covered or talked about? Maybe anything that really concerns you?
So it's always been kind of this, especially when somebody famous gets a breakthrough case, right? We see it. We saw like a football coach recently announce that he had a breakthrough case of disease after being fully vaccinated. Shandy's right that those are going to occur because the vaccine isn't perfect. And we have these variants that act a little bit differently upon the vaccine. But I think the most important follow-up to this is that he wasn't hospitalized. He had very mild symptoms, was able to convalesce at home and get better, and is now back to work because he was vaccinated. If he were unvaccinated, that might be a very different story, right? So I think that's kind of the follow-up piece that we should be seeing more of and more talking about that point as opposed to breakthrough disease, is that we can recover fairly quickly without hospitalizations and mortality.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And, you know, I think sometimes when folks are reading about what's going on with the global pandemic, it's kind of tough to figure out with statistics and numbers and, you know, what does that all really mean? Do you have any advice for folks when they're taking in this information?
Yeah, I would definitely look to what I would call reputable sources, things like the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, your local or state health department's website, or even the World Health Organization, right, to get that. And recognize that these numbers change daily, right? And you have to understand how they're counting cases, or are they calculating a rate for that? So I would stick with reputable sources and have some sort of monitoring daily if you want. Like, those are things that I do every day. I just take a quick look at a couple of different websites that I trust and just see which direction are we going. Some of the graphs, like on the State Department of Health website, are really informative to identify a trend. Are we going up? Are we leveling off? Are we going down? Those are important pieces. But what Shandy indicated is now is not the time to let your guard down. Even if it looks like we're leveling off or starting to go down in cases, that's because we're being vaccinated and we're wearing masks again.
When you mentioned sort of looking at the CDC and some of these reputable sources, it makes me wonder, you know, sometimes I'll see things that will say this area is substantial or high or low. How do you figure out, like, if you go into a community, if it's a high transmission? I'm just saying for myself, a non-medical person, like, how do I interpret that? Do I just say, oh, that says high, I shouldn't go there?
Yeah, so that's based on some sort of positivity rate, right? How many people are testing positive over the number of tests given, right? So then that gives us, well, a percent positive of the population. And, you know, our goal in Indiana was to be below 5%. So when we start seeing 7, 8, 9, 10% positivity, that tells us that transmission is high. Right. And that could be from a number of things, including people not being vaccinated, not wearing masks, and congregating when they shouldn't be.
Well, Shandy, when it comes to the CDC and its messaging, do you think they've done a good job or should they have been focusing on doing a better job?
I've got to say, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but unfortunately, I think there have been a couple of missteps. So I think a lot of us in public health are in agreement that the message about taking off the masks was not taken the way they intended it. So I think CDC tried to use the whole idea of if you're vaccinated, you can take off your mask as the carrot. And unfortunately, we did not have enough people vaccinated yet. And what we saw was everyone took off the mask, whether or not they were vaccinated. I know if I went to the local grocery store, I saw 5 or 10% of the people wearing a mask, even though I know in my area, only 50% of the people are vaccinated. So I know there's some lots of unvaccinated people out there not wearing a mask when I'm out in public. And so that approach obviously did not work. They really wanted to push the positive side of getting vaccinated, and it just wasn't enough. We need to have those conversations with people. I think access has been pretty well solved for most people, not for everyone right now with vaccine. I mean, you can go into your local store, a pharmacy, your local health department. A lot of providers around Indiana now have the vaccine in their offices. So the vaccine is available. It's still free. But unfortunately, people just aren't getting that push to go get vaccinated. And so they need to take the time. What we're seeing is more success when some of these larger employers have the mandates, just because you can capture a chunk of people at a time. And also when we take the vaccine to employers, employees report they're just more likely to go ahead and get it. It's right there in front of them. The expectation is kind of there that they get it. So they get it done. They don't have to make an appointment, go find a new clinic site, anything like that. So we need to have those conversations to convince those people to go ahead and get vaccinated.
We have a question from Sarah on Facebook who asks, what are people saying about immunity after having COVID-19? Do you still need to get the vaccine, or do you have a 6 to 8 month window of immunity and then it significantly decreases?
So what we know currently is that there is some immunity after being actively ill. What we don't know is the exact time length of how long that window is to have what we would consider full protection, right, with where you have enough antibodies to fight off another infection. So the advice right now from public health officials and medical community is to, even if you have had active disease, you still need to be vaccinated, because we know that the vaccine helps protect against things like the Delta variant, whereas your previous infection may not offer that level of protection.
If you've had COVID before and then you get the Delta variant, would it hit you harder?
We don't really know that yet. There's not a lot of information around that, but we know that it's possible. We've had people be reinfected, and every time there's a variant, that possibility goes up.
Well, Thomas, what are your thoughts on, you know, we talked a little bit about the CDC and the messaging. It can often make people feel like, well, now I can't trust anyone because they keep going back and forth. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so Shandy brings up some really good points, and it's important to have consistent messaging across all sectors of the media and the communication industry itself. But I think that, you know, that to me is probably the hardest part, because we have different websites and different things we're looking at, so everybody's kind of saying different things. But we definitely need that messaging to be consistent and recognize that, you know, the science changes. As we learn more about these variants or about this disease, we're going to update the science and the recommendations for that. It's not that we're changing the message. What we're doing is updating the message to reflect what currently the science knows about this.
Well, when it comes to user-friendly resources, Shandy, what's the best place or ways for listeners to keep track of COVID infections around them if they're interested in doing that?
So again, as Tom pointed out, I use a reputable source. So the Indiana State Department of Health has done a great job actually of visualizing cases. So if you play around on their vaccine dashboard, you can look at what areas are well vaccinated, which ones are not. Same thing for the case count. You can look at positivity rate. You can look at deaths reported in the area. You can look at the total number of people getting tested. So you can kind of see where those waves are hitting. Unfortunately, we've got a few counties now in Indiana under the red status on the Indiana dashboard because the positivity rate is going up too quickly.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to talk with our health experts about the latest news around the pandemic, the Delta variant, and new guidelines and mandates in Indiana. If you're listening live and you have questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All in Vox Pop. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it on the show. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobel. We're discussing the pandemic and the impact the Delta variant is having in Indiana. With us are two guests from the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University. Shandy Dearth is director of the Center for Public Health Practice, and Thomas Dzinski is the director of Epidemiology Education. Shandy, what are the latest guidelines in Indiana right now around mask wearing and social distancing?
So right now, there are no statewide mandates on either of those. There are recommendations. Basically, the governor and the State Department of Health is leaving that up to the local health officials. And because of some recent legislative changes, how that works now in Indiana is that a local health official must get acceptance or permission from their county commissioners or their city county council, depending on their jurisdiction. So basically, if a health officer wants to do a mask mandate, they do that in conjunction with their county officials as well. And right now in Indiana, I believe the only mask mandates that we have are sometimes on some of the college campuses. Those are coming back right now from what I'm seeing. I believe the city of West Lafayette just introduced a mask mandate again because of the increase in numbers and with Delta. And I believe Monroe County is also asking for some sort of mask mandate going forward.
And just to clarify, health officers, if they want to mandate masks, they have to sort of get approval. So are you saying that a medical professional has to get approval from folks that aren't in the medical field?
Correct. And that's part of the issue is that you then have to get the county commissioners to understand the need for the mask use. And as we all know, there's been a lot of backlash against mask use these last few months around the country.
Yeah. We've definitely seen that. Again, I always say this every time we talk. I like wearing my mask. It makes me feel warm and cozy. So hopefully more folks will take heed. Thomas, do you think we could be headed towards another lockdown?
I certainly hope not. And I mean, we just have to kind of watch the number of cases. I don't think anybody wants that, right? So we're watching the number of cases. We're watching the number of hospitalizations and including, you know, intensive care populations and such. So we hope that we don't get to that point. And there's really an easy way to avoid that, which is, hey, get vaccinated, get fully vaccinated, wear those masks when going into public spaces, especially indoors. Those are just simple things that we can do right now that we know are very effective. And that's really our pathway out of the pandemic as a whole.
And what are your thoughts? You know, I mean, if it is likely that we're headed towards another lockdown, would numbers have to be at a certain range? Would hospitals have to be at a certain tipping point?
Yeah, obviously, it would have to get a lot worse than what it currently is, including the number of people dying from this disease, again, would have to go up more than what it is right now. But really, it's unnecessary for anybody to be in that situation, as I said. I mean, we would be really hard pressed to move back into that. But it is a possibility that can happen. We're trying to avoid that.
Shandy, when it comes to the number of folks getting vaccinated, are we still seeing the groups that are hesitant or refusing versus people that are getting the vaccine, or is everyone just not getting it anymore?
Well, unfortunately, what we're seeing is we're still kind of frozen. I know in the last week I've seen reports in some states saying with Delta going up and the increase in cases, some areas are reporting that more people are seeking vaccine. Unfortunately, that hasn't really happened around Indiana just yet. Hopefully it will soon. Right now, only about 51% of the eligible people in the state of Indiana are vaccinated. Most of the surrounding states are higher than us when you look at our vaccination rates. And I want to point out that only 22% of the kids in the 12 to 18 age range are vaccinated. Schools are all going back now. These kids are in classrooms. Most schools are not mandating masks at this point. And all of the classes are in person. So that's a great potential for spread there. So another reason to go ahead and get your kiddo vaccinated. As a parent, I was vaccinated to protect myself, but also so I don't pass it on to my kiddo. But as soon as my oldest was eligible to get vaccinated, I got her vaccinated, and I cannot wait until I can get my 11-year-old vaccinated. I'm very nervous as a parent sending my kiddo into a school where he's one of the very few kids wearing a mask right now.
We have a listener voicemail from David with a question about school districts across the state. Let's take a listen.
Hi, I'm David from Crawfordsville. I'm wondering about the fact that some of our school districts aren't doing what the CDC said. Your public health officials, can you believe that this is going on? Help us.
So unfortunately, I understand the frustration that the caller voiced right there. What we're seeing is just as many parents were very vocal against the mask as we're in favor of it. And so as we see these numbers go up, that's where we need to see the other side get a little more vocal in asking for the mask use to come back. Unfortunately, again, it's up to local health departments. It's up to the school district superintendents to enforce any kind of mask mandate. Most schools in Indiana are under a recommendation. And so as a parent, I just encourage you as another parent to go ahead and make sure you teach your kiddo about the importance of wearing a mask. I mean, my kids have heard nothing about COVID for the last year and a half because of mom and dad. So my kids are, but I know, unfortunately, a lot of the other kids are not right now.
And Thomas, I mean, what are your thoughts on you know, being in public health and seeing these things happening against public health guidelines?
Yeah, I want to echo some of the things that Shandy indicated. It sure, obviously, as a parent of a young child in school still, myself as a parent, we could all look back to those days when we were all home together, trying to work and trying to do online learning, and, you know, the economy was closed and such. And again, nobody wants it. I mean, I want to be back in the classroom. I want our kids to be back in the classroom. And the safest way to do that at this point is like wearing masks, because my fear is that, you know, we're going to have disease in these schools, and then we're going to pivot back to where kids are back home again doing online learning, which is not what we want. So there is a safe way to do this. We were able to demonstrate some of that earlier in the pandemic by wearing masks and keeping that physical distance until we can get vaccines into arms of children less than 12 years of age when that approval occurs.
Well, and Miriam, I just want to point out, too, something that we're encountering right now in contact tracing is that parents are not aware that quarantine is still a thing. Yeah. We're still doing contact tracing in the schools. And if your kid is identified as a close contact, that kiddo is back home with you again. And so that's a huge issue that we're encountering, because everyone's ready to go back in the office, back to normal. But it's quite possible your kid is going to be sent home again for 10 days or 14 days, depending on what kind of recommendation the school district is following. And so, again, it's another reason to get as many people vaccinated as possible and to use the mask.
And it's not just the students either, though, right? I mean, we have to think about the staff of the school, the faculty members, the coaches, everyone else is just as susceptible to this, right? So that's why, you know, wearing the masks and getting vaccinated when you can, when you're eligible, is the best thing to do.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's just so hard to wrap your head around it, you know, just the many facets of this virus and how it can spread in different ways. So it's just easier to get that vaccine, get that mask on, and just go about your day.
Absolutely.
We have another listener voicemail. This one is from Greg with a question about infertility.
My name is Greg. I'm calling from Greenwood. Could you please comment on some of the misconceptions about vaccine, specifically about fertility, and why so many parents are hesitant to vaccinate their children? Thank you.
That's a great question, and I'm sure Tom can offer some information, but I just know that basically that is misinformation that's been spreading through social media. There's no evidence to suggest that this vaccine affects fertility in any way. And in fact, it's best for pregnant women to go ahead and get vaccinated. We've seen very sad cases where pregnant women have ended up with COVID and they've been hospitalized. Sometimes they've suffered some issues with the child because of that. And so we really recommend that everyone get vaccinated, including pregnant women. So talk to your OB about that if you're concerned about that in any way, but it does not affect fertility.
Yeah. And Thomas, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's exactly right. If there are concerns, talking to your doctor ahead of time is the best way. And getting vaccinated as soon as you can.
Well, if you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Thomas, do you think public health experts have learned anything over the last year about the most effective way to convince people vaccines are safe?
I think this is something that we've struggled with for several decades now in public health, is getting people vaccinated, right? We saw this even before the pandemic, is trying to get people vaccinated for the measles, for example. Then we started seeing a rise in measles cases in the U.S. Because people were intentionally unvaccinated. And a lot of times their reasons for not being vaccinated weren't founded necessarily in science, that they just didn't want to do that or were fearful of some bad outcome. Mm-hmm. So this has always been a challenge for us. And I think many of the same things that we've done with other vaccinations to try and get people vaccinated has worked with COVID, right? One is it's got to be free. We can't charge people for vaccines, because the minute we do that, then you eliminate a certain percent of the population that, one, either can't afford it or won't spend the money on it. Two, we have to streamline the process, right? We can't have just pages of paperwork for you to fill out to get vaccinated. It's got to be very simple and easy. And then the third piece is access, as Shandy mentioned previously, is we've seen this effective where we take the vaccine to you, right? Where you don't have to drive an hour to get vaccinated, or you don't have to stand in huge lines any longer. Shandy pointed out, you can go to your local pharmacy on the corner, your doctor's office, the health department, these mass vaccination clinics like at IMS and such, really opened up that access. So those three pieces alone do a tremendous amount of getting people access. We know that there's just going to always be a percentage of the population that are absolutely going to refuse the vaccine. We understand that. But the key is we want to get to that magic herd immunity, and we're not there yet.
I'll say I've been thinking about that, how we get these vaccines and then hopefully we get to herd immunity. But sometimes it can feel frustrating to then hear, well, now you might need a third dose. Does that prevent anyone from getting vaccinated?
So there's been a lot of talk about having a booster, right? And right now there is no reason to offer boosters, but there's been discussions around people with immunocompromising conditions, like COPD or cancers or anything that would cause a weakened immune system, to give a booster dose of the vaccine to increase the number of antibodies, which again is designed to keep you out of the hospital and keep you from dying from this disease. So I think that might be something in our near future if we can't get the community spread back under control.
Well, we have a listener voicemail from Dawn about how local physicians and the State Department are working together. Let's take a listen.
Hi, this is Dawn, and I live in Indianapolis, but I have grandchildren who live in outlying counties. And when I've asked at a recent party, I ask, is your family doctor encouraging you to get a shot? They are telling me that it's not even brought up. So my question is, how is the health department, the state health department, working with local physicians to encourage their patients to get vaccinated, or better yet, providing them with the vaccination when they're in the office? Thank you.
That's a great question. I know we've talked with the State Department of Health a number of times at Fairbanks, And Dr. Box and her staff have been reaching out to physicians around the state. Obviously, they've got everyone's contact information because of the Health Professions Bureau. Everyone has to be licensed. And so they've offered vaccine in the clinics. The provider offices do have to have special refrigeration units, that sort of thing, because you have to keep the vaccines at certain temperature to make sure that they work. They are sending out lots of information to providers to push that education. And I know even before COVID happened, they've got staff on their vaccination team that will go out and talk to providers' offices about the need for vaccination. But again, I understand providers are often short for time with patients. They're trying to cram a lot into a visit. But that's where we just need to continue to do more education with the providers to get them to understand the need to encourage the vaccine with their staff or with their patients, take the time to talk about the vaccine. The Kaiser Health vaccine monitoring report, when they survey people to ask about why they got vaccinated or why they won't get vaccinated, what they learn from that is that a lot of people will trust their personal provider. So if their personal physician says, yes, you need to get vaccinated, they're a lot more likely to get vaccinated. So I know the state is working on it. I know we've got a big mountain to climb with that, and I'm sure they're going to keep working on that for the next several months.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see how a personal provider would be you'd feel more relaxed and comfortable. I'll be honest. I got a vaccine at a pharmacy, and the person that gave it to me said they weren't vaccinated. And I was just like, okay, that's interesting. Yep.
Yes. That's a hard one to swallow.
Right. And so, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, even if your provider doesn't offer it to you, talking to your provider, you know, while you have them in the room with you is a great idea. But if they don't offer it, there are plenty of other places you can get it. So you can kind of take that responsibility on yourself and seek out a vaccine, like I said, from the pharmacy, right? I mean, so the access is there.
Yeah. Well, Thomas, when it comes to sort of how Indiana is doing right now compared to other states, we have about a minute and a half here. Where is Indiana in the grand scheme of things? Are we doing worse or better?
We're kind of in the middle of the road. I believe we're close to that 50% range. I'm looking up the numbers as we speak. But we're in the middle of the road. But we definitely need to get more people vaccinated, because where we also are is we're seeing an increase in hospitalizations across the state. We're seeing more and more people getting tested and turning up positive. So our case counts are going up. Our positivity is going up. And then, you know, when we see those hospitalizations go up, where there's usually a couple of week lag where we start to see mortality start to increase. And we really don't want to get to that point.
Well, when it comes to what's happening right now, Shandy, is there anything that worries you the most about where Indiana's headed?
Just the fact that the numbers are going up so quickly and we're all back in person and trying to get to the new norm, but we need to take those extra steps, vaccination and masking back up again until we get enough people vaccinated.
Is it safe to go indoors even with a mask, or is this Delta variant surpassing masks?
So I'm vaccinated and I have a mask. I'm wearing my mask again when I go indoors. So I'm feeling okay when I go indoors. But again, masks are not nearly as effective as the vaccine. So I say give yourself lots of protection. I mean, when you drive a car, you have an airbag and a seatbelt. Why would you give up one of those if you don't have to? So go ahead and protect yourself.
All right. We will definitely take that advice to protect ourselves. Thank you both so much for taking the time today. Shandy Dearth, Director of the Center for Public Health Practice at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University. And Thomas Dzinski is the school's Director of Epidemiology Education. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.